ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय19.3, question 26 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by King Pariket of the sages gathered on the bank of the Ganges. He placed this question before them just prior to Sukadeva Goswami's arrival on the scene. Question 26. Did we already do this? No, we did this, didn't we? Huh? Huh? 27. Okay. Question 27. Verse 24 continued, but as expressed in verses 37 to 38. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection for all persons, especially for one who is about to die. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. Nimisha 14. In the original verse 24, Maharaj Pariket phrases the first and second part of his question thusly. O trustworthy Brahmins, I now ask you about my immediate duty. Please, after proper deliberation, tell me of the unalloyed duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically of those who are just about to die. However, because Pariket receives no answer from the sages, who take to discussing amongst themselves the question of verse 24 until Sukadeva himself arrives. In verses 37-38, the king repeats his two questions directly to Sukadeva Goswami. The first question, as he phrases it in verse 37-38, remains essentially unchanged. What is the duty of everyone in all circumstances? He expresses the second question more elaborately the next time around. The essential point remains the same. What is the specific duty of one who is about to die? Very shortly. The second time around, he strengthens the second question with a request for additional details about what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should or should not do. Yes, so what we see is that he's bringing out, means he's given this to the sages, they're deliberating, because they're from all different groups, so they're naturally going to, you know, think about it thoughtfully and try to give him a good answer. But because they're all from different backgrounds, and that will definitely take some time, by Krishna's arrangement, then Sukadeva Goswami arrives on the spot at the time. And then he again places the question, because from the reaction of everyone there, they can see he is the, you know, someone very special. And so then the question is again placed before him, but this time his placement is such that he's emphasizing the second half of his question. Because what one does in all circumstances, that would be dependent upon the second question, what one does at the time of death. Because that's the test, right? It's just like you go to school, you learn so many things, but there basically there's going to be a test that checks that, right? So your credit on your course is gained from the test, right? I mean, of course, how you do during the other times is how well you'll do in the test. But this test is such that it's, how do you say? It's not something you can practice so much. You know what I'm saying? Like you can practice writing essays quickly, or, you know, answering questions, or you can memorize, you know, words or verses, or, you know, so many things you can do because that's part of life. But it's really hard in life to practice death. Right, it's something we don't really have experience of. So that's why it doesn't work by, you know, the modern method where you just cram the information the last, you know, few days or weeks beforehand, and then you're able to get it over the test, and then, you know, it's done, and then back to life. No, this test is, you have to be good or it doesn't work. You know, it's, in other words, time of death means that whatever is known to you as your identity, your shelter, your activities, your results, anything that you consider important is being taken away from you at one point, and it's very obvious that it's going to be complete, right? There's not a option that maybe you'll get through this, right? You have a tough situation, you know, everything falls apart, everyone's freaking out or something, but there is the option that, you know, after it's all over and everybody's shut up and everybody's emotionally calmed down, that things can go back to normal. It was rough, it was disturbing. Of course, it was a test of so many of our qualities, of our humility, our tolerance, our determination, our intelligence. But still, you know, we'll be back with our friends and that, and everything will be nice, and we'll be laughing and joking again, and eating and reminiscing and thinking about how, wow, that was really tough. Right? But death means that option is removed, and it's very obvious. You know, this is it. It's the final test. So then that means it has to work. So now in this is, we have an identity. We've developed our whole life, who we are, what we do, what we can do, what result we get, how people interact with us. If things are tough, where we go for shelter, this, that. You know, what do we do? Okay, things get tough, I go out for a walk. Or things get tough, I chant japa. Things get tough, I sit down and read a book. Things get tough, I go out and party. You know, or what is it? Or if it really gets tough, we go shopping. Right? So then, is that right? So then, but the difficulty comes is here, none of those options are available. Right? They're just not there. You know, we haven't heard that at the time of death suddenly this whole mall opens up with all the best shops and all the latest goods. So it doesn't work like that. So therefore it's by practice that it's second nature. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to be able to do this without thinking. Right? So that's the real life situation is like that. So the real death situation is even more like that. So therefore, the need of the first question, what are the activities or what is the duties of someone in all circumstances? Because what you do in all circumstances is going to reflect on what you do at the time of death. Right? So the most important is what happens at the time of death. Right? Does that make sense? But how you're going to perform at the time of death depends upon what you do the rest of the time. Does that make sense? So that's the connection here. So here he's brought it out a little bit more clearly, right? So the first time he said it, it's nice. There's all the sages there that'll answer the questions, but they didn't answer the question. So now he's being more specific. Same questions, but now it's taking it a step further. But also you can see here is that here chant, remember, and worship, because anything that you are going to be successful at, this is what you do. Right? So before it was a general question, because you figured it would come back with devotional service. It didn't come back at all, let alone with devotional service. So now he's asking more specifically, because then you get it very clear who your deity is and what your process is. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. Any question on this? No. 19.4. Srila Sukadeva Goswami begins its answer in Canto 2. His answer fits both questions, the one Pariket asked the sages and the one he asked Sukadeva. He completes the answer at the end of the second chapter of the second canto. Ultimately, however, as Srila Prabhupada confirms in his purport to verse 24, His answer spans the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam up to the glorious departure of Maharaj Parikshit from this world. So it's how you say, because these are essential questions. As one needs an identity to function, so the intelligence also needs points of reference, right? The identity is a point of reference, and from that point of reference everything is perceived. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're in an army and you're the general, then your perception is that you're the general. But if you're the private, then your perception is you're the private. Right? So an identity must be there to function. So in the same way, the intelligence and the mind also have to have these points of reference. So then, in that point of reference for the intelligence, then it's a framework or a methodology by which you can contemplate and understand anything, right? Because intelligence likes to deal with things, analyze things, right? So it has to have some method for doing that. So that method must be applicable in all times and all circumstances. So that means it must be very essential. Otherwise, it's a detail. It won't apply in all places and circumstances. Does that make sense? So this principle, then how do you say, from that we can, anything that we come across, we can deal with it in that way. So that keeps everything very clear, everything focused. Because if we lose our focus, we don't do anything. Right? Nobody does anything unless there's a focus. Once there's a focus, then things happen. If there's no focus, it just doesn't happen. Does that make any sense? So, intelligence then has to be there. Mind also has to have a method, a focus. So it must have, because it accepts and in other words, the intelligence, its identity is connected with the ability to analyze how to find differences and how to find commonalities, right? Because that's what it does. So it must have some method for that, right? And the mind, it accepts and rejects. So then it must have a method for that.
This has nothing to do with you, Maharaj.
Oh, you're just a...
I'm a very bad boy.
Sharpening the knife or something.
I just wanted to point out a minor technical thing. This Vinoda Kumar is by Bhakti Vaibhava Devi.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I forgot to remove that, so...
Okay, cool.
Okay. Use some other phrase.
Okay.
I'm gonna visit Calcutta. See.
I see. Yeah. Sharpen your skills.
I don't go unarmed.
Okay. Armed with the sword of knowledge. So. Yeah, so it needs a frame of reference also. So that means a value system on which you judge whether something should be accepted or rejected. Does that make sense? So technically speaking, that's what we call religion. And the method to analyze things, that we call philosophy. Does that make sense? Right? And then the false ego, that would be, you know, basically a combination between those, but a little bit more on the mind, in that it gives us our social position on which we can, apply the our value system using the intelligence. Okay? So now, at the time of death, then basically, then what is our real value will be tested. And our mundane, how do you say, identity is being removed. So it's something that has to be practiced very much so that it just happens naturally. Right? So he's wanting to know, what you meant, hear, chant, remember, and worship. Okay, so that's because those are the things that should automatically come, the time of death, then what we're hearing, chanting, remembering, who we're going to, you know, who is that we're remembering. Like that. And then what we shouldn't do, in other words, what things are going to distract us at the time of death. Right? You're going to work. Because Krishna in the Gita mentions that one who leaves thinking of him alone. It's very important. He doesn't say one who dies thinking of me comes to me. He says one who thinks of me alone comes to me. That's important. This came to mind once, just one devotee was telling, you know, these, you know, how you say, out of body experience kind of things. So they were going somewhere, I don't know where it was, but in a, you know, in their vehicle, and for some reason or another they had some kind of a crash. And the next thing he knows is, you know, he's the, you know, the typical, you know, floating around somewhere above that, watching everything and all. And then I think he was saying is that then there was kind of like, from there he could see everything, you know, see himself in the car and all the things and the accident and all that. And then from there he started thinking of Krishna and started going away from the car, going up. Then as he was going, you know, everything was very nice and he wasn't worried. Then he thought, well, if I leave, then, because he just had a daughter was born. He says, but now who's going to take care of the daughter? Bang, the next second he was back in that car, awake and aware of, you know, having been in an accident. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. Krishna is that you're ready to come, you'll only think of him, you'll be happy. That's why it's mentioned, one has to be bold enough to actually cut everything off. Right? So that means there must be a lot of practice that I'm not the controller and enjoyer. Right? Because that's the point, is that I am, we're thinking, I am the cause of someone else's happiness or security or like that. You understand? Or there's others other than Krishna that we take shelter of when we have difficulties. Right? So either we are shelter or someone else's shelter or both. You know? Does that make sense? So that means a lot of practice has to be done in life, that Krishna is the actual shelter and we are only an instrument for others' shelter, right? And anybody else in the material world who we see as shelter, it's actually only as representing Krishna. Does that make sense? So if that's practiced, then at the time of death, then that's very easy. You just immediately go to Krishna, and you know he's going to take care of everything else, so you don't have to worry about it, because we're not doing it anyway. Right? That was the, I think it was Ramanujacharya. He had decided to take sannyas, and I think his wife was just about to give birth to a child. So he was just about to leave, and then he thought he would just wait long enough, because I think she was in labor, that to see if it was a boy or a girl. Just, I guess, interest sake, you know, the curiosity killed the cat, you know, formula. So he just stayed back for the few moments, and the child was born. But in the process of the child being born, the mother died. So now it's like, well, how does he take sannyasa? Because the mother who would have taken care of the child is not taking care of the child. So then he was in a quandary about what to do. Just at that moment, then, in the side of the room of that, there was a tiktiki egg. Then the tiktiki broke out, it was born. And as soon as it was born, then a bug came by and the tiktiki grabbed it and ate it. So then he turned and left. Because he understood when someone appears, all their maintenance, everything is already arranged. In other words, how did this bug happen to just walk by just as the tiktiki comes out of the egg? So with that, does this make sense? So these practices must be there. So even one's endeavors in material life, in the way of, you know, religion, social, you know, different social, you know, position, status, wealth, sensuality, emotions, they must be designed in such a way that they do not get in the way of the final test. Right? They can't distract us. So that means, so now if you look at that, then one would think, one might have a doubt. Okay, so I have to bring my life in line with Krishna consciousness, that I'm always thinking of Krishna and never forgetting him. Very nice. But the problem is then, how do I actually fulfill the material need? Right? Because that's there, and it's a distraction. So one of the processes, you know, many feel is, okay, then this part of my life when I'm young, then I will dedicate that to, you know, family life and all the things that I want to get out of life. And then when I'm old and I can't do all those things, at that time then I will specifically dedicate myself to, you know, full Krishna consciousness. In theory it sounds good, but unfortunately because one is so attached to those things, then that loss creates a depression, which means you don't do anything. You know, it's a reality. You have something that makes you happy, and you don't have that anymore. Then it creates, again, it's a loss of identity, right? But one doesn't do anything, you know, until one adjusts with that. Does that make some sense? So that doesn't necessarily work. Otherwise, you would see in India millions of sannyasis and preachers and, you know, spiritualists, because that's the general concept here. But do we see that? No. It's not a whole army of retired grihasthas who are now pushing forth the, you know, scriptural understanding of, you know, Vedic knowledge. Right? No. So it sounds great when you're young, but it doesn't work. And then when you're old, it's miserable, because you can sit there and just watch while everybody else does all the things that you used to do, you know, and used to be good at, and, you know, and you can't take part. You can't, it's just, you know, you're a has-been, you know. So then, that doesn't work. Then there's the fear that, well, if I Krishnaize all my, you know, emotions and those kind of relations and sensuality and like that, then there won't be a satisfaction. I won't actually have gotten, you know, satisfied. Like, it's just like, ever try to sit down to a tasty meal with a health freak? Right? You can't enjoy it, because whatever you do, oh, it's so oily, oh, it's so this, oh, it's so that, oh, so much spices and all that, and oh, it's, you know, cooked like this, and oh, it's, you know, it's just, you can't enjoy, right? So then we're looking at that, I want to be Krishna conscious, but I have to deal with the fact that I know so much, and so I'm supposed to apply that in Krishna consciousness connected with all my, you know, social and emotional interactions. So then I won't really enjoy. Right? So later doesn't work, and if I do it now, it won't work. So then what are we supposed to do? Right? So, but actually the actual position is different, because the Vedic, that's its point, is that sense gratification is lower. Emotion, fulfilling emotional needs, mundane, are lower. Economic needs are lower than Krishna consciousness. Therefore, but at the same time, it's not that because it's lower, it's put on the side, right? The Vedas don't believe in the modern concept of 100% or nothing. First class is good, second class is useless. Right? They don't believe in that. They believe in first class, second class is second class, but useful in a second class situation. Third class is third class, but useful in a third class situation. Right? So if you can function on the first class, that's best. If you can't, then the second class is the way you're going to get to first class. So the point is if you're not first class now, follow the process of taking the second or third class method and become first class. Right? The kid has, you know, just first goes to school, he can't read. So we go, oh, useless, you know, until he can study, you know, hear this book on law or medicine or, you know, physics, nuclear physics, then, you know, what's the use? No. So that would be the mana, ah, stupid kid. Right? But the Vedic is, no, now he studies. And then by studying, he will become able to do these things. He will become first class. Right? Does that make sense? So then that means that if you're going to deal with second class and third class options, they must be designed in such a way that they are so efficient that they bring you to the first class platform. Does that make sense? And the first class platform is you can distinguish between matter and spirit. But, so to do that, you must know what matter is. Right? That's why it's vidyam cha, right? It means you study knowledge and ignorance side by side. Then you can tell the difference. The karmis just study ignorance. And if the spiritualist only studies spiritual and not material, he won't be able to tell the difference either. Right? Does that make sense? You have in the Bhagavatam that one sage who was basically liberated, right? And then, so he was there on the platform of Brahman and that pleasure of Brahman, the experience of Brahman, and then this very beautiful girl comes up, and he doesn't identify as a girl or anything, but it creates an experience that's pleasant also. It means his Brahman experience is pleasant, and this is also pleasant. So he just knows pleasantness. Right? And he's commenting how beautiful she is and that. And it must be very difficult. You want me to help you? You're carrying those two heavy, you know, weights on your chest. Do you need some help there? You know, just trying to be helpful. He doesn't know what it is or anything. And so he's, you know, it's just like this. And so then from there, because he can't distinguish, then, you know, it just goes farther. So you have to be able to tell the difference between the two. Does that make sense? So if one can tell by hearing, which is the first class process, and make that distinguish, great. If not, then by seeing. If not, by experiencing. Does this make sense? So that experience must be complete, that you can't say something was left out. Does that make sense? It has to be what you could do with it. It's been done. At the same time, that's all you can do with it. See, the materialist thinks there's unlimited things they can do. But there's only a limited amount of what you can do. Right? You eat something. How many ways? You can basically, you're going to stick it in your mouth, right? like that. And you can chew it up quickly, chew it up slowly. You know, you can, you know, it means you have just a few options. Once you've tried all that, you know, chew it 32 times or things like that. Or, you know, what is it? Chew your liquids, drink your solids. You know, that's it. So, you know, you say, and after that, that's it. Right? There's only six tastes. You know, there's not a seventh. So you've tasted the six tastes, and you've tasted, and they're nice, and you like them, right? You get sufficient of them, and then that's it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the idea of the Vedic, is that it's not that it will be any less by having the knowledge and be practicing it to come to the transcendental platform. Factually, it will be more. We don't talk about that much because one may, as Vyasadeva, because that's what he was giving in Mahabharata, was how to operate the material energy for the most efficiency and, you know, come to the Krishna conscious platform. That was his purpose. But unfortunately, to make that point very strongly and give all the practical examples, the people will only glean how to operate material nature to the best efficiency. You know, in 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita out of 100,000, we might be missed. Right? Like that. Or they'll glean from that, do your duty. Okay, and that's take care of my family and make my money and, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So, the emphasis is never on that. It's just understood that the Vedas probably gives the point is that when the material world is made, then there's a book, a manual that comes with it that tells how to operate it. So the main operation is how to get out of the material world. But since you're in the material world, how you deal with the material world, it tells that also. Right? But that's secondary. It's not primary. Therefore, it's not emphasized. It's just automatic. It's just like, if you don't breathe, you'll die. But do we sit around talking about breathing, how important it is to breathe, and, you know, you must breathe, and don't stop breathing, you know, and like that, and, you know, yeah, okay, see you later, Prabhu, happy breathing, you know. It's like, it's like that. You know, put your best breath forward, and you know what I'm saying? We don't emphasize it. So, therefore, eating, sleeping, mating, defending is there. It's dealt with. But it's not primary. Right? And so that one understands that, yes, this has been done, been there, done that, then it should be done with proper efficiency. But at the same time, it's without knowledge, even properly done, it won't have the proper effect. Right? Because if you don't have knowledge, then you'll think that somewhere else is something else. Right? Means if you're functioning, that's why we went back, is that you have these formulas on which you function. That you know those functions apply at all times, all places, all circumstances. So if you start from there, then you know the experience I'm getting from position. It doesn't matter what the position is, it's the same experience. Right? Whether it's a very big position, very small, it's the same. Okay, I'm in charge of the, you know, kitchen go-down, so I am the lord and master of all the potatoes that I can survey. Like that. But, you know, that's it. Or if you're, you know, master of something bigger, it's not going to be any different. You know, relationship with a friend, the relationship with a child, relationship with a husband and wife. It's not going to be different. You change the partner, it does not change the experience. Right? Because it's based on the same point. You have a whole basket of apples. Right? Any one you pick up is going to taste like an apple. Know that. It's not going to taste like a mango or anything. It's going to taste like an apple. Right? One might be a little sweeter, one a little bit more sour, but it's an apple. Right? But the options are there. A little more sweet, a little less sweet. That's all. It's not something else. It's not going to be bitter or you know, have some chili in it, or, you know what I'm saying? It's just going to be an apple. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter where it is. You want to make a chutney, or you want to cook things, you go for the sour ones. You want to do something else like that, then you go for the sweet ones. Does that make sense? So depending upon what is the nature, then it's then one chooses one's association. Does that make sense? But it's not going to differ. The experience is not different. You know, any man from any place in the world, any country, from any social status, if they sit down with another man from somewhere else, completely different, completely opposite, and talk about their experience in household life, they will be talking on common ground. You know, the feelings, the experiences in that, the mediums through which that's there, that will be different. But the experience itself will be the same. Does that make sense? It's universal. So it doesn't matter, even here, what kind, it doesn't matter what planet, it's still the same. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important in the Vedic knowledge that they give you these formulas on which you can function. And those formulas always work, and it doesn't matter where it's applied. They always work. Like that. You have to remember, God's a smart cookie. Right? He made the universe, so he knows how it works. So if he tells you it works like this, it's not a bad option to believe it. Right? Because if we compare our intelligence to his, we might find he comes out on top. Right? It's one of those maybe not necessarily inspiring facts, but it's true. Right? He is the smartest person. So if he says it works like this, then we shouldn't go, no, it's not. Oh, the Shastra doesn't have it. Oh, that's very general. Or it doesn't apply in my situation. Or like that. Does that make sense? So that should be, that faith should be there that, no, this works. Now, the shortcoming is my intelligence and my commitment to understanding how it works and applying it in all the aspects of my life. That we can say. Does this make sense? Okay. So then, point is therefore, if one does that throughout life, then according to the Vedic principles, then the result will be good. It will disconnect you from the material energy. Right? If you perform an activity with knowledge and not attached to the result, right, you will be liberated from the material world. It's just how the material energy functions. Right? You act without knowledge, with attachment, you will go deeper and deeper into material consciousness. Right? It's just how it's designed. Does that make sense? You put your finger into the hot water, your finger will get warm. You take your finger out of the hot water, it will cool down. It's that simple. Problem is we think we know how the material energy works. But no, Krishna says there. We've been in the material energy, we have become attached to it, and we have become frustrated. And not frustrated just one lifetime, a lot of lifetimes. It's been said someone who comes to Krishna consciousness has already been through the 8,400,000 species of life. And they don't bother to calculate there how many times. You know, it's just that you have tried whatever there is to try, it has been tried. You've chewed on every leaf and poked through every bit of mud and flown through every bit of space and swam through every bit of water and crawled through every bit of mud there is that could be done. Right? in all its varieties, right? So that means, you know, I mean, how many kinds? There's like 300 kinds of dogs. So that means you have experienced, you know, dogness in, you know, as many varieties as you can get. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, therefore, then one has tried everything and one's still not satisfied. That's the Vedic principle. You know, third class intelligence means, okay, you want to go for it? Go for it, but go for it completely, right? You know, you're doing the dog trip. Okay, here's 300 species. Go for it. And then you'll be convinced, okay, dogness is not where it's at. You know, okay, now I can try catness. You know, or, you know, how you say, boreness, or, you know, snakeness, or, you know, like you know what I'm saying? But it's been tried. So then, we should have that faith that we may have our idea, but it didn't work. We tried everything, and we have not been satisfied. Had not. So, why not try this formula Krishna gave? A really simple formula. I mean, of course, it takes good qualities and endeavor to apply. Very simple. Do your duties. So that means you have set formulas of what activities you should perform spiritually and materially according to your particular nature. Then, within that is do those duties because they should, at least the beginning stages, because they should be done. It's right, it's good, and that catches the mind, right? Because the mind has to be involved to be, you know, satisfied to move forward. But it's because it's good and I will get a good result. But then the result then should be that I'm not working for the result, I'm working to just do my duty properly. And whatever result comes, comes. Okay, so that, okay, I can relate to that. It's an emotional thing. It's a higher, it's a step up. It's progressive, you know, it's just a good thing to do. But then, with time, we understand is that we don't want the result, but we do want the result for Krishna. Therefore, we're very determined to do things for Krishna. So, in this, we can add more spiritual into our endeavors, because the other one is because we're interested in material things. So that will be prominent. So the karma yoga will be prominent. But as we understand, there's a higher principle in this and that. Then the jnana comes in. So then, that knowledge by which it's being done. The metaphysics by what is happening. You know, I mean, there's knowledge of technically the skill, how to do it, but here we're meaning knowledge of what's actually going on behind it. One is technical knowledge that's given by Shastra. That's good. You do it by that, then you know that there's a limited amount of options of how this can be done. Okay, music, there's only 7 notes, right? That's it. Each note has a variety. You know, Sa has 4, Re has 3, Ga has 2, Ma has 4, Pa has 4, Da has 3, Ni has 2. So you get 22 options, variations you can do, but there's still only 7 notes. Right? That makes sense? But you can adjust that note a little bit up and down, that's all. Right? So, and that's music, and you get unlimited music out of it. But you know it's only 7 notes. So you can't say, I haven't tried, you know, one of the notes. So therefore, in the Vedic, is all of it's there, then that's all there is. It's tried, and then you can move on. But you have knowledge that, well, what's behind it? How is it functioning? You know, how are the energies working? Then that then creates less. When the mystique is not there, it has a different kind of, it's not a binding attachment. The attachment's still there, but now it becomes progressive. Because you're attached, but at the same time is you are in the process of trying to put the other foot on transcendental. Right? So it may be you are still bridging material and spiritual, but that endeavor is being made to put the other foot on the spiritual rather than both feet firmly planted in the material. Right? Then, the point is then Krishna goes on to say, and then do remembering me, doing it for me. Right? So in the beginning we're doing it because it's good, it's nice. You know, it will get us out of the material world. I don't like the material world. It's painful, so I want to get out. So that's why I'm doing it. But then it's doing it because it pleases Krishna. I get out, don't get out, that doesn't matter. Krishna's happy, that's what's important. Krishna says he will, so you don't have to worry. But that's not our worry. We worry about thinking of Krishna. So then it takes on another level. And then the mind is again caught, but now for the point of attachment to Krishna rather than attachment to Maya. Does that make sense? So that's where it's going. If you follow it, know that, that's where it will go to. You want to walk through a door, you won't get stuck in the door if you are focused on what's on the other side of the door. If you only focused on the door, then you get to the door, then you, yes, you may get stuck at the door. Right? So therefore, knowledge, knowing, you could get stuck there if that's actually what's important to you. But if developing love for Krishna is important, knowledge is not going to be a distraction. It's going to help. Because you're simply trying to transfer from material attachment to spiritual attachment. But in between, that means the material attachment has to be start to be erased. So that's erased through knowledge, right? With the sword of knowledge, one cuts material attachment. So when one actually sees it for what it is, the Vedas is not a problem. You still work with it, right? This is sometimes a mistake, is that as soon as I have an understanding of something and it's not good, I drop it. Like if, okay, material endeavor, family life, or economics, or this and that, or social position is not good. So I immediately drop it, but that's knowledge. Then you have to get realization. Realization comes from, with knowledge, working with it. So you're still working with it as if one's attached, but one has the knowledge that it actually isn't giving what I have was originally thinking it does give. Or what I would perceive that I was getting from it. Then with time, then one starts to see that the actual acting principle is the Lord's potencies and not the item itself. Does that make sense? Then one's situated on the spiritual, then one can leave that. But if you're situated on the spiritual, it doesn't matter whether you deal with it or not. Right? If you're transcendental, then there's no problem of prestige. Right? So you're not worried that you have to leave family life because prestige doesn't matter. So if it's favorable and at the time and it's not against Krishna consciousness, it's progressive, then if you're liberated, you can still work with the family situation, no problem. In fact, you'll probably work better. Because you don't have your own agendas to attend to. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that still there. And then when that situation is not favorable or there's another that's more favorable, only then they might move on. Right? Does that make sense? Because sannyas means giving up the result. Right? Does that make sense? Here meaning giving up the result, meaning giving up the need or desire for the result. Right? That you want the result, got it, and give it away, that's renunciation. But that you don't need the result, that's sannyas. But it doesn't mean that you can't deal with results. Right? That's the impersonalist, that's bogus, is that the result is coming, but I don't deal with it. Because I'm sannyasi. No, because that's repulsion of before. I need the result, so I work and get it. I don't need the result, so I won't deal with it. Sannyas means is that result is there, but it's not mine. It's Krishna's. Right? Does that make sense? That's it. Even in the Veda, even in the Karmakanda, then that's worked in, because every ahut means when they offer the ghee into the fire, that's, you know, their process of attainment through karma of their goal. But each after each oblation, then they say that this is for this personality, it's not for me. Right? It's Veda. Idam Krishnaya, idam Namama. It's for Krishna, it's not for me. You know, so I guess after millions of lifetimes of doing that, then one day one realizes, hey, I'm doing this, it's not for me. You know? Right? This makes some sense? So, that simple formula of performing the duty, the God-given duties, without the desire for the result, right? With knowledge of how we connect to Krishna, who we are, what the material energy is, done to remember Krishna, done to please Krishna. It doesn't matter what it is, it will liberate you, right? That's the point. Doesn't matter what the action is, you will get liberated. Does that make some sense? So, yeah. So, therefore, that's the whole reason that he's asking, what do you do in life that life, life's duties, then support the ultimate point of remembering, you know, what you're supposed to do at the time of death. Does that make sense? That's why there cannot be a contradiction. It has to be a seamless transition from one stage to another. That it's actually, because it's based on the same principles, therefore changing from one station in life or all the different, what do you call it, those rites of passage, moving through various, you know, positions and experiences in life are consistent, and they're all for the purpose of becoming God conscious. Does that make some sense? Any questions on this? Is it no questions? Because it didn't make sense, or is this bewildering, or all the questions were answered, or, you know, if we sit here long enough, then class will be over. If we don't ask any questions, they'll stop talking.
what is the specific knowledge that has to be employed?
That's the thing, is that's what this section's meaning, is that the whole Bhagavatam actually is explaining that. The point where we were starting from was that there's formulas on which everything is made. So the whole Bhagavatam, even though it's giving so many details of application, it's still applying these two things. Does that make sense? No. Here's the question is, what are your duties? And what do you do at the time of death? So what are those duties then are shown through the whole Bhagavatam. You know, and you also have examples of people, you know, Dhruva Maharaj at the time of death and others like this. So, but it's showing, the whole Bhagavatam showing this through practical examples, Puranic examples of histories, of actual history, you know, people's lives, devotees' lives. So that's what I'm meaning, is that the Bhagavatam is not, it's just, it's unlimited, but it's still speaking on the same topic. So I'm saying, you can still get unlimited out of only a few things if you know how to combine them together. Right? Like we said, it was seven notes, but if somebody just hums a few bars of something, you immediately know what it is. And it's unique. You know, tunes that go back, you know, 10, 20, 100, thousands of years, right? Those tunes were made thousands of years ago, and no one's made one that it's the same. Right? And there's a lot of musicians doing a lot of music. You know, and if somebody isn't original, they say, oh, that's like this music. It's just a copy of someone else's. Does that make sense? So, What it is, the point being made here is because the when we go through, then he says it's answered here in the second chapter, next canto. So the specifics of it, what we're bringing out here is he's asked these two questions, and you'd think, okay, these are two questions, and then there's so many other questions. But actually, all the questions of the Bhagavatam after this point are further details and answers of these two questions. Does that make sense? Up to now, the questions have been, how did this Bhagavatam come about? Right? Like that. There were six questions asked by the sages. So those take up this whole first canto. Like that. They're answered in the first three chapters. But then example of that is shown, and fulfilling all that out is through there, you know. So they ask the six questions, then they ask, why is it spoken? Right? Then that's your next chapters. Because then you have to give the whole thing with the Pandavas and all this, and then Parikit, and then his being cursed, and now it's being now the Bhagavatam will be spoken. Right? And now he asks these two questions, and then that will be answered in the rest of the Bhagavatam. Right? So, in other words, you have base questions, and then from that, the fundamental question, and then everything else is trying to find out variations on this. You know, it's like you want to know, okay, how are we going to get there? Okay, we're going to go by vehicle. You know, so my question is how we're getting there. Okay, by vehicle. What kind of vehicle? Oh, by a car. What kind of car? You know, oh, this kind of car. You know, okay, well, what model or what color or how many people can go inside or why did you pick that car or why, you know what I'm saying? But it's all still just parts of how are we getting there. Does that make sense? So this approach to the Bhagavatam is being used so that you can, get, in one sense, get a grasp on it. But at the same time, as that's the perfection, is even though you have a grasp of it, it's still unlimited, right? Because it's Krishna. He's near, but he's far. He's the smallest, but he's the biggest. Right? He's in your heart, but he's everywhere. He's in, permeated everything in the material energy, but he's not, it's not him. He's separate. You know what I'm saying? So, the point is to grasp the principles on which it's all working, but at the same time, according to our ability, then we can understand how much to apply it, how much it's applied. Right? Like Sukadev Goswami, I think Sutta said it, Sukadev will say it, it's just like birds can fly at different levels. Right? So then, some birds can fly higher, some cannot. Like that. It's important to notice the energy levels, where they're going. Yeah? You catch that? Can you catch this flow of energy? Like now it's going to you. You catch that? Yeah. Can you catch that? Now can you catch this is not to you? So then when it's like this, don't keep moving right in the way. Then he moves his head this way and I move the energy over here and then you move your head over here. It's nice to be in the line of the energy, but this is a class, not a personal interaction. Does that make sense? What were you saying? Yeah, means just like that, as you grasp that there's seven notes, until you've grasped the seven notes, you can't be taught music. But if you think, oh, I know the seven notes, I know music, and so that's it, okay, been there, done that, now let's move on to something else. Okay, what's medicine? Oh, that's based on mucus, bile, and air. Okay, three things, that's even easier than music. Hey, that had seven, this only has three. Cool, okay, next, you know, what can we move on to now? You know, and so, you know, and hey, okay, martial arts, that's yin and yang. Hey, that's only two, okay, that great, you know, hey, you know. You come home, tell your mommy, hey, mom, I'm an expert in music, medicine, and martial arts, and all in within 5 minutes. Hey, aren't I cool? So, no, it's that those you grasp that, then you start to understand how those are applied in every situation. Does that make sense? So that's what we're speaking on here, is that that's okay. And by doing that, one, it's not that it's, oh, it's so simple that it's not that. Like once I was talking to, I think they were a postgraduate in mathematics, and I was talking to them about Vedic math and showing how it's so simple in its form, is that everything is actually reduced down to addition. No matter what it is, even subtraction is taken as addition. It's just like you want to take 7 from 10. So what do you have to add to 7 to get 10? Right? It's not, well, if you take 7 away from 10, what do you have left? The Vedic is, what do you have to add to 7 to get 10? Right? So it's just, in other words, everything's addition. So it makes it very easy for the intelligence that it's always the same. And they didn't like that. They got very annoyed. Yeah, I know that. And they know that math is like that, but they don't like that. They like it to be complicated and everything like that. You know? So it's not a bad thing that it's simple, because then you can grasp it. At the same time, from that simplicity, unlimited can come, because it is fundamental. Fundamental means, based on that, you get everything else. Right? So fundamental isn't simplistic. So that's the difference between the Vedic Academy and the modern. The Vedic is, you teach the fundamental to the kid today, and then you teach unlimited details as far as he can expand, as long as he can go. Modern Academy is, I give basic details, not fundamentals. And only when they get, I hint at fundamentals at undergraduate, and only in graduate do I actually tell them how it works. So it's actually backwards from the Vedic Academy. You know, so that means in the modern academy, someone who's a postgraduate and someone in primary school wouldn't really have anything uncommon to talk about or appreciate. But in the Vedic, they would, because they have the same fundamental viewpoint. But just one has more mature, so therefore then it can be given. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, why do you have to, after going to school, have to go to school how to be a teacher? Right? You've gone to 12 years of school, then you got to go to 4 more to teach, show how to teach. What do you mean? You should already know it. How you learned is how you teach. So that means is because what you know and the kids don't know, there's no substance in between. But if you learn by substance, all it is you're giving substance and taking that substance step by step further and further as the detail is added on. Does that make sense? So that's why in the Vedic Academy, you don't have a teacher's degree. Because if you've gone through the academy, you are a teacher. Right? Does that make sense? It's a different approach. So, one doesn't have to worry that there's something less. So, it's based on these two. It's answered throughout the whole thing. Right. So, the whole point is to, you know, hear, chant, and remember about Krishna. Right. That's what one should be doing at the time of death. You know? So, then he's going to give so many, you know, applications of that, because you have to apply it in all aspects of your life. You know, so you see people managing countries, people fighting in wars, people getting married, people conceiving children, you know, people dealing, women dealing with their social life, you know, dealing with family issues, you know, in-house, you know, this one in the family doesn't like that one in the family, right? Daksha Yajna, right? The father-in-law didn't like the son-in-law, right? You know what I'm saying? These are day-to-day stuff. So it's showing how it applies everywhere. Does that make sense? Then we're able to function. Yeah? Okay? So we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janita Gaur Prevanam ki,